listen what I say. Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, for Football Friday on Cofield & Company.
Another 52 Fridays concert going down tonight, 8 o'clock. Crank it up. The Guess Who. Sing it, Adam.
No? No thanks. There's no words.
He said no thanks. How's the wackiest corridor in all of Las Vegas today?
Wonderful.
Is it? Well,
Angel's getting a workout. So he's jumping up and down from the chair a lot.
Has he had to do it a lot today?
A lot. Way different with only one person here.
Yep.
Like, they just feel like I'm just here to talk to them.
Well, a lot of times you're not speaking either, because obviously we're in different locations, so you're just sitting there listening, and
True.
They just think, like, nothing's going on. Meanwhile, you're trying to listen, or you're talking to Eric Fetty, and you've got people coming up trying to give you high fives and
ask
you football
is.
Questions.
Yeah, ask where the valet is. It's over there. Go over right there.
We love the Golden Nugget. It really is. It is raucous every weekend. These Fridays are completely nuts, and I would say it'll calm down as the weather gets cooler, but it won't, because in December – you've got NFR coming to town, so they've got a ton of country legends playing in concerts, not just the 52 Fridays, but there's a good 10 days of concerts in early December around country music that'll be happening. You got 11 great restaurants at the Golden Nugget, and they're actually adding your favorite chicken joint. The Chick-fil-A is supposed to be on the way here relatively soon.
I can see
the
spot.
The Golden Nugget downtown.
I can see the coming soon spot down there right at the end of the hallway.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Yeah. And you're across from the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen. You got the Grotto there. Vic and Anthony's is awesome. So Lily's, you listen to the commercials. My favorite place. It's all at the Golden Nugget right downtown on Fremont. All right, so we're going to talk to Caleb Herring, who's actually here in Fort Collins in about 10, 12 minutes about UNLV football, a little NFL and college football as well. But I would say we have to hash through what's going on with the Redskins, but I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
This is on the surface, and you know, the same thing started to happen. Well, this is worse, but a similar thing started to happen about 2 weeks ago with the Jets, right? And former Raider Kelechi Osemele, where Osemele had two different opinions saying that his shoulder was jacked and he needed surgery. And the Jets are busting his balls over it, finding him. We don't believe he needs surgery. You know, questioning the guy's heart, his gumption. He goes and gets the surgery. And listen, you know, anyone who listens to this show knows over the years I talk way too much about the Jets. I'm a Jets fan. The Jets are what the Jets are because of who they are. I think I said that the right way. They're a crap organization. They are. And they've consistently been a crap organization. I don't know that they've consistently done this when it comes to injuries. Which brings us to the Redskins. The Redskins are garbage because Dan Snyder is garbage. And of all the things they've done over the years, and there's a lot of bad ones. I mean, they mistreat their fans horribly, or they treat their fans horribly. The latest with what Trent Williams started to talk about a couple of days ago and a surgery he got. And I guess, Adam, what did this all start with? He failed a physical, and part of the issue was he put on a helmet, and I don't know if it was one of the new helmets, but he said he had some pain with the helmet and his head. And then we come to find out that he had surgery, and he had – now we're finding out there was, I guess, a big difference of opinions between the Redskins and Trent Williams. This is nuts.
It's crazy. Now, yeah, so the helmet thing I think was a source of a lot of humor for people the other day because it seemed like, hey, Trent Williams is holding out. He reported just because he has to get the league year accrued. And then he said, you know what? Helmet hurts. He's pulling in Antonio Brown. That's what everybody was saying. And then all of a sudden the story starts to, you know, come out a little bit more. And as you mentioned, he had a growth removed from his head earlier this year that was cancerous. He said he reported it to the Redskins team doctors 6 years ago. They looked at it. They said, hey, that's minor. Now, there's a huge caveat to that. Because if you listen to both sides and what everybody's saying, what they said was, we believe it's minor, but you might want to have a second opinion on that. Now, to me, I think a player hears that and says, oh, it's minor. Okay, fine. I don't need to go. I'm good. You already told me it was minor. That's fine. Now, I get the Redskins, I'm sure, will counter and say, hey, we're not your doctor. We make sure that you can play. that wasn't affecting your ability to play. We told you to get a second opinion. Go out and get that. I think that's what it's going to come down to. But Trent Williams earlier this year did have that, you know, growth removed from his head, and he said nobody from the organization came to visit him in the hospital. Now, this is a serious issue that he's dealing with. That's a pretty strong accusation to say nobody came to the hospital to visit him. No coach, no general manager, nobody from the front office, certainly not Daniel Snyder. The Redskins haven't really denied that. He said only D'Angelo Hall came to visit him. The Redskins did say they sent a trainer to check up on him, somebody from the medical staff to check up on him, but nobody visited. This is This is a mess.
They're such junk. But you did lay out a case where maybe the Redskins are being slammed. Maybe people are going overboard a little bit.
I don't think that excuses them.
Well, on the visiting part and following up on, you know, one of the highest paid players and a guy who's been with the organization forever, can you care a little bit? Just a little?
Yeah, and can also, like, I don't think it lets you off the hook. If you're, listen, I understand it's a business, and the team physicians, the team doctors, the medical staff is there to ensure that you're okay to play. It's not necessarily their job to monitor your actual health, I guess, would be the case you would make. But to me, like, when you tell a guy, hey, we think it's minor, even if you tell him to go get a second opinion, I feel like he's putting his health in your hands. He's trusting you. Like, I don't think it completely lets you off the hook to just say, yeah, maybe you should get a second opinion.
Don't you feel like stories, like a story like this, does affect the team?
Of course.
Like, who on the team, especially anyone who's been there for a while, who on the team wants to go out and bust their ass? I mean, you want to play hard enough so that you're not going to hurt yourself. But if you're pals and you've been around Trent Williams, come on, this is like any workplace. If you begin to distrust your bosses and think that they don't have their your best interest in mind, are you really going to put forth 100% effort?
Doubtful.
When they treat players like this?
No, and are you really going to want to go play there?
Well, that's the bigger thing. With what the Jets did to Osemele and now this story with Trent Williams, you think they're getting free agents?
I mean, no. But at the same time, like, if they offer the most money, there are guys that are going to go there. But if it's a competitive situation of, like, I got two similar offers, I think you're going to weigh that if you're a free agent for sure.
You have to be all over Buffalo this week, minus 10, right?
Well, especially with the announcement that Haskins is starting.
Uh-oh. God.
I'll tell you this. I tried to pick up the Redskins or the Bills defense in every league that I could.
It's 10 across the board now.
Yeah.
Good luck. Do you have any success trading the Patriots defense?
No.
You didn't?
I was shooting for the moon.
Well, why don't you shoot for less than the moon? No. So tell the story again, because anyone who didn't hear it, we've told it a couple times, but you have like 25 fantasy teams.
Yeah.
The best player, unit, scorer in all of fantasy football this year has been the amazing New England Patriots defense. So we're at the halfway mark, and you're like, all right, well, they're going to dip from here. The schedules suck.
They've played a bunch of nobodies, and now all of a sudden they're going to play some legitimate offenses the next few weeks. So I wanted to bail. Their value will never be higher, certainly. I think there's a couple quarterbacks, but they're the highest scoring, you know, player. Yeah. So, quote unquote, in fantasy football. So I basically offered. I went to every team and said, like, all right, here's the Patriots defense for Christian McCaffrey. Here's the defense for whoever. So I was shooting for very high, basically, you know, one of your best position players to get him back. Nobody took it in a bunch of leagues that I'm in. But I will say, I also am not going to lower the price, because as I pointed out, even though I think you're going to start to see the defense struggle a little bit and not quite put up the same numbers that they have, if you actually break it down, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, during the fantasy football playoffs, and, you know, most of the teams that I have the Patriots on are pretty much locks for the playoffs. Once the
Look
playoffs
at you.
Come around.
Eight weeks in, locks for the playoffs.
Well, that's, I mean, 8 out of 13 for the most part, right? I mean, way over halfway through the season. Mm-hmm. And if you have the Patriots defense, you're probably winning your league. I mean, they've been that good. So I'm going to be in the playoffs in most of those leagues. And if you look at the end of the season, they're playing, I believe the last 3 weeks are Cincinnati, Buffalo, and Miami, which are terrible offenses. So all of a sudden, the defense will be valuable again in playoff time. So I'm not just going to hand them away.
Josh Gordon got picked up today by Seattle.
Yeah.
Did you try to grab him in lots of your leagues?
I don't think most people got rid of him. Now, I've got him in a couple leagues, and I didn't get rid of him. I've still got him on the roster in some leagues, so I will, not this week, but next week, hopefully be able to get him in there. I think he's intriguing. But we also, like, we talked about this the other day,
right?
When Dustin was on, like, we are all romanticizing Josh Gordon from like 2015, 2016.
Sure.
And as much as the talent is still there, I don't think he's the same player anymore. And I think as much as he's going to have flashes, he'll make some big plays, he's not going to be a consistent week to week guy. But I still am so in love with the talent, and I've always liked Josh Gordon as a person too. Like, I just want it to happen. So I'm hoping, but I'm not going to be counting on him to be like a starting receiver for me.
Back to college football, and we'll discuss Tony Sanchez's future and just how big this game is in Fort Collins against Colorado State.
Jamal Neal, part of an I formation. Now rolling to his right is Oblad. Throws for the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Rebels! The touchdown to Giovanni Paolo. And the Rebels are within 20-16 with the extra point coming up.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget Las Vegas for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
UNLV kicked the extra point, but that was as close as they got the rest of the way. So, 2017 loss, that was last week. Russ and Caleb on the call. And it's kind of been the story the last 2 weeks. While the result in Fresno was an absolute blowout on the scoreboard, they were very much in the game. They could have won that game. Had they had a better first quarter, taken advantage of good play in the first quarter, and that, you know, didn't melt down in the late third, early fourth, they could have won both of these games. It's been a really weird season, Caleb, and now it's set up a situation where, for Tony Sanchez, he's got to win out, or at least win three of four. He's got to get this thing going in the right direction, and he looks back, and I'm sure he's like, man, we left so much on the football field. We shouldn't be sitting here with this record.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. I think there's been games, like you said, the last two in particular, that have been very well-played games on the part of the Rebels, and just not coming out with a win hurts a lot more, especially in the situation. Like, the farther along the season goes, the more crucial they become, and at this point, it's backs in the corner. Like, you have to win out, essentially, from the preseason goal of making a bowl game or getting to six wins, and that ending up meaning job security, I guess, for Tony Sanchez. So that basically means win. And with the way that these two last losses have happened, with the five turnovers against Fresno being the death of you, and there's really nothing as a coach you can do to overcome that on the field. Like, you can't coach not turning the ball over while it's happening. You can preach it all week long, but that happens. You can't, against the number 28 San Diego State, a good, solid 7-1 now football team, you can't make the wind not blow and the field goal kicker not hit the upright. Like, not just a missed field goal, but hitting the uprights. Like, the odds of doing that are just – it's not very high odds of that happening. For it to happen and that be the reason that you lose a game, that's just tough. And he's got a lot of bad breaks. Now, not making excuses, wins and losses, you have to have them. Every coach goes through this, and Tony understands that he's not going to shy away from that fact. But these last four games are absolutely must wins to try to remove any doubt or any speculation that he's gone. Otherwise, I mean, you're looking at maybe having to make that change at coaching.
Caleb Herrings with me, Steve Cofield, here in Fort Collins. Adam Hill is manning the set at the Golden Nugget. So, Adam, present your case. You think that Armani Rogers, if healthy, should be starting in this game today? Or not today, tomorrow?
Yeah. I mean, with a caveat. I mean, I think you should be starting younger players because you should be looking to the future. But I don't think this staff is really in that position right now. And I don't think, you know, anybody has the appetite for that right now. I think Armani Rogers is still your best bet to win games if he's healthy and ready to go. But, I mean, I think there's so many factors that play into this now. This is not – you're not playing for the future anymore. You might not be here. So you've got to try to win now.
Let's just deal with, would Armani give them a better chance to win tomorrow? Caleb?
In my opinion, from what I've seen from Kenyon, no. I don't think so at this point. I think Kenyon's grown enough to – and the running game has been – fine without him, so I don't think that necessarily disrupting the flow or whatever rhythm offensively they have gives them a better chance. I think there's some different things that can happen throughout the game. The passing game might disappear, so that's going to hurt. Randall Grimes has come out. You know, the passing game in general has come full circle now since Kenyon's taken over, so I don't know if taking a step back and going back to Armani necessarily makes it better, but in a situation, if there's something that calls for Armani during the game, I wouldn't be surprised. Like Adam said, this, it's not about looking to the future. It's about getting this win. Like,
right.
If there's a situation where, like, Armani's talent right now helps us, let me put him in the game because I need this win bad. That could possibly happen, but I don't see him starting being the answer here.
Can I tell you, Adam, Caleb's answer surprises me for a couple of reasons. We haven't talked about this. I'm just trying to read into what you say during the games.
Yeah.
And actually, you said it in radio spots. One, you pointed out that you don't want a quarterback controversy, so I thought you were really coming to the defense of Armani. And the other thing is, while Oblad made some amazing passes last week and the passing game has opened up, you were also very critical of him.
Yeah.
Which I thought was leading to talk this week that Armani should be back in there. Yeah. Why were you – point out your criticisms of Kenyon while he made some really great passes and it has opened up the pass game and Grimes has come alive and the tight ends are now a weapon, especially Noah Bean. What did you see that he needed to clean up last week?
So last week was a case of just talking about that game specifically, and the misses that he had was a case of San Diego State's pressure rattling a young quarterback, which is just what's going to happen. And most quarterbacks get rattled by San Diego State and pressure and throwing the ball before he needs to and then becoming inaccurate and rattled in the pocket. He got sacked 3 times, I think, in the first half. So, and he was taking shots off. So I would credit a lot of those deficiencies last week to that. He has shown that he's able to make passes downfield, complete passes in traffic on critical situations, third downs, which was a huge problem for UNLV all season long before he stepped in. And since, you know, Tony's been taking over, third downs being a big thing. But going back to the whole, I don't like quarterback controversy, and I don't like the swirlings that maybe the backup needs to come in. If that's the decision, I'm fine with pulling the trigger and this is our guy now. But there can't be this – I don't agree with the back and forth between quarterbacks, specifically at the quarterback position. Now, there can be a battle with other guys, but at quarterback, you need to have a direction and just run with it. Then there's another criticism I had of Oblad, and that was that his ability to affect the game with his legs, I think. That ability from a quarterback is crucial in college sports at this point. If you look across the nation, every quarterback really that's had success can hurt you with their legs at some point. And I think with a read option style offense – Kenyon has the ability and should exercise the ability more to pull on the zone reads and hurt you with his legs a little more. And I think that's one of those things you can coach him to do that. You don't have to full sail switch back to Armani. You can say, hey, Kenyon, you see an opportunity, take it, get 5 yards from me. That's something you could coach up with Kenyon. You don't necessarily have to switch back to Armani. I think it's a valuable part of the offense, but I don't think you necessarily need to switch quarterbacks to get that at this point.
Expound on the point you were making a lot during the San Diego State game was on bubble screens. Those are kind of the easiest passes you have to make, that he was just a little bit off. Now, again,
yeah.
I think you just said it. He was rattled. So I want you to talk about the bubble passes, the bubble screens, and also what you face in a San Diego State defense, because you've talked about your experience against them, that what they bring is really weird and it does kind of freak you out.
Yeah, because it's just so it's designed to create chaos at the line of scrimmage. Now, they don't bring a lot of numbers, San Diego State, but they bring different varieties. So you really don't know who's coming any given snap. So the idea is to get rid of the ball quickly, and that's what bubble screens are designed to do, get it out quickly. So the urgency as a quarterback picks up. Unfortunately, sometimes if you're not well versed at it, as some other teams across the nation are, where they're throwing bubble screens, you know, 60% of the time in their pass game, that is their offense, that's a very delicate play because it works very well if it's accurate. And if it's he hit the guy in stride, you saw the difference against San Diego State. There was one that picked up 6 yards, 6 or 7 yards to a gasser on the edge because it was an accurate throw. But if it's off by just a margin, it's a catchable pass. It's not bad. You know, you on an out route down the field, you say that's fine. You can get away with that. But on a bubble screen, because the timing is so sensitive and you're relying on getting the ball there quickly, getting running quickly, if you're inaccurate at all, it's going to show up. And that was probably the biggest problem I saw last week with Kenyon and his accuracy, is those timing plays were thrown off by receivers reaching back behind them, trying to make catches and jumping, making acrobatic catches, when you really just want to make that like a long handoff, get them running as quick as possible and pick up some yards. So that, I think, hurt him a lot because his urgency was just a little bit elevated as opposed to what it normally is when he's relaxed in the pocket just delivering the ball. He's trying to get it out quick, understanding why he's throwing that pass against San Diego State, trying to get out quick like that.
The defense played well last week. You know, San Diego State is, hey, they have a style. You know, they're going to run the ball, but UNLV didn't get smashed by the run and got really good in the second half when they allowed around 100 yards or less for the entire second half. But, again, the numbers on defense are getting to a point where the defensive line, we're watching the game last week, and, you know, Ezenwa, who comes into the season, is like the third option at defensive tackle. He's got a foot injury. You know, all of a sudden you got freshmen and sophomores in there who go like 260. And, you know, in the case of Naki Fahina, I mean, he's about 260, but he's like 5'11". How do they hold up tomorrow against CSU?
It's going to be tough. I mean, numbers are depleting as the season goes, and it makes it even worse because the games are getting more critical as the season goes on. And late in the season, especially up front, you're going to be leaning on the guys because the run game becomes more important, especially it's going to be cold tomorrow. They're probably not going to be airing it out much, even though Colorado State has an explosive offense. They will try to take shots. But later in the season, more teams lean heavily on the run. And if your defensive line is dropping down into the 250s, it's going to be hard for them to sustain four quarters of just getting leaned on by offensive line. So that becomes a problem. And then on top of that, with UNLV specifically, their offense struggles for whatever reason during halves or quarters of the game where they're just three and out, and the defense is on the field for extended periods of time. That can't happen. And especially if you're down to your sophomores and freshmen, the guys with less experience, less size, and all of the things that come with being a young guy, if they're on the field, they need to be on the field as little as possible. So that becomes a factor. And I know Tony feels the urgency, Skipper feels the urgency, but if you want to hang your hat on anything, is that they've been playing well while they've been in. Like you said, the second half against San Diego State, they held them to 3 points, and that's a good football team. No matter what style they're playing, they usually can dominate in that style. So for them to have that kind of second half was big. Can they do that for the next four games? Because they're going to have to play lights out for the rest of the season.
You did the coaches show this week with Tony Sanchez, the Tony Sanchez radio show. Caleb does it every week. It's on Wednesdays at Parkway Tavern. It'll be back at 215 of Flamingo location this coming week. Any word on Chad Magyar in terms of health? Because when they've had both running backs, you know, Charles Williams has had a great year. But, you know, if they can, obviously, the Vanderbilt game was the ultimate. They both got 20-plus carries. Where's Magyar? Because he, against Fresno, he fumbled early, didn't play, had a migraine, came in, was okay in the second half. He didn't get really any action against San Diego State in terms of carries.
Right. So the word from Tony on Wednesday was that he's more healthy and ready to go. So it wasn't officially that he's back to 100%, 20 carries or anything like that, but he's going to be more available than he has been in the past 2 weeks. And that was from Tony himself. So I'm assuming that's big for the offense because it keeps that run game viable no matter who's out there. But also Reese got some catches last week too. Yeah. So adding him to the mix in those kind of situations, he's not going to be nearly as heavy an option as Magyar or Williams, of course, but that's a little breather there. If you can trust Reese a little bit more, then, I mean, it doesn't hurt to have him in the lineup as well. But Magyar, from what Tony said on Wednesday, will be available, and he should get more carries than he has the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, he got dinged up in that game. He was limping badly after the Fresno game. Last one, they got Tylee Collins going. He made a big play at the end of the first half. What do you think? Final four games, do we see some of the Tylee Collins level play that we got a year ago?
I think you should. I think him, he's a confidence guy more than anything. I think he appreciates the touches and wants more touches. You saw him on kickoff a couple of times, eager to just return one. There's, you know, nothing but touchbacks against San Diego State, but him being eager and hungry to make a play and make some stuff happen, he's hit a different gear. I think early in the season, Coach Sanchez would, you know, kind of talk about him trying to reverse field a little too much and spin the spin move that he kept trying to pull out. But these last few games, he's really put his head down and just trying to get positive yards. He made a couple of big plays, a couple of third down conversions that were huge to keep drives alive. He's not the shot play down the field guy that he was his freshman year, because Grimes obviously has stepped into that role. But finding his niche in the offense is kind of where he's at right now. And I think that bubble screen, that short to medium range game, if you can find some ways to get him the ball on some screens or stuff like that to alleviate pressure for the pass rush, then I think he's finding his niche. And you have to find a way to get him the ball more creatively, I think, than just the jet sweep. Because I think at this point, a lot of teams have scouted that out, not just with the Rebels, but that's one of those plays that kind of has trickled its way through the ranks, and everybody's kind of prepared now for that jet sweep. You got to get him the ball a little bit more creatively, and he can make plays with it.
Adam, what do you think is going to happen?
It's gonna,
against CSU.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough matchup, and you know, UNLV has showed signs, as they have for the last several seasons. They just haven't been able to consistently stack efforts, you know, good efforts on top of each other. For the most part, I think that they're going to have a close game. CSU was coming off a really impressive win last week on the road. They go and beat Fresno. But I don't think they're that much better than UNLV. I think, you know, the line is just over a touchdown. I think that's
about
where it should be.
The summer line was a pick. It's now 9.
Yeah.
That's a big jump.
I don't think they're that much better than UNLV, though. I don't.
And I would agree with that. Looking at the rest of the schedule at large, I don't think any of the teams remaining. I mean, maybe Hawaii is the scariest, but the rest of the four teams, if I was going to say at UNLV at their best, or at least when they're playing, say, like Vanderbilt-style football, when they're playing consistently, UNLV is just as good as any of the rest of the teams on the schedule. And that's my opinion. But the problem has been, of course, that they've only been that team for one complete game and then for spotted quarters for the whole rest of the season and seasons past. So will they be able to have 100% consistent play for the remaining 16 quarters of football in the season? I don't know. I don't think it will, just based on what we've seen. I don't think they will. So I don't think they get there. And if they lose against Colorado State, I think that's a big gut shot, where that last goal is – that goal of getting to six wins is now completely impossible to achieve. And I think that is a gut shot to the team. I think it's for Tony, obviously, for obvious reasons, and then for the team for having that team goal still out there. You can't say that anymore after a loss to Colorado State. So this is – the biggest game of the season, in my opinion.
You can hear Caleb, Russ, and myself tomorrow midday. Is you got a 12:30 start? Do I have the time right?
12:30.
I guess I'll show up on time.
Pacific time, I think. 12:30.
Yeah. 12:30 Pacific time. We're all screwed up. This Mountain Time stuff get you all jacked up. And temperature today is around 38 degrees. Going to get a little cold tonight, but tomorrow for the game expected to be manageable. It's not going to be freezing, because it was freezing the last week up here in Fort Collins, but it's going to be around 45 to 48 degrees. RJ Bell's up in about 15 minutes as we'll talk a little NFL. Caleb, we appreciate it. Adam Hill's down at the Golden Nugget. We'll come back in just a few. And like I said, NFL wall to wall with RJ Bell.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.
With a kick right to the midsection and a kick to the head, and Lester's down. And there's Velasquez mounting Lester, and Velasquez with the rights and left in front. Lester trying to cover up.
Dane looking for the finish, trying to stop Lesnar now. Lesnar
right to the knee. Lesnar with Kamara. Kamara locked. Lesnar went to the knee. Kamara locked to Velasquez. Submission move is locked in. Will Velasquez tap out to Lesnar and the Kamara? And he does. It's over. Lesnar retains.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget Las Vegas for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
I can't believe that happened. I mean, they fought in UFC, Adam, and Brock Lesnar had so much trouble against Cain Velasquez, and all of a sudden he's learned submission moves. I can't believe Cain couldn't get out of that. Kimura, what happened?
I think that was the most surprising thing. Of, you know, Brock's jiu-jitsu game developed a lot between the first fight and this one. Kane also, you know, his you know, legitimate wrestling skills seemed to evaporate, because he couldn't do anything about that hold.
Really falling off.
Really wasn't in a great position either. I mean, that's one you expect him to get out of.
Yeah. I lost. I had Kane plus 160. They got me.
They got me.
Yeah, we're being incredibly sarcastic. That was awful.
So
you
bad.
Even the fake MMA that they were trying to do looked terrible. The submission that he got was awful. We're not going to sit here and, you know, break down jiu-jitsu, but there's no way in hell.
You can.
There's no way in hell Cain Velasquez would have tapped. By the way, thanks to the WWE for the audio. There's no way that Cain Velasquez, a former world champion, would have tapped to that stupid Kimura in the position he was in.
It seems scripted to me, Steve.
I actually didn't even realize that they were doing. I thought they were going to do this event this weekend, but they did the what is it called, the Crown Jewel.
Thanks for reading my story on it.
I hadn't seen. Did you actually do a write up on Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman, or you didn't do it because Fury's not MMA?
No, I talked to Kane and I wrote a feature on him. But yeah, none of the other guys were of interest to me, and I had to tell Kane, can we drop the wrestling act? I'm actually trying to do an interview with you.
Did you say that? Really?
Basically, yes.
What did he say? Did he laugh?
Kind of.
Yeah. He's not a sense of humor guy, really.
No. He got it, though.
Yeah, I guess Tyson Fury, I read he had a shocking KO against something called Braun Strowman. You ready for this after the fight?
Oh, my God.
At TalkSport.com, British site, Tyson Fury says Braun Strowman would beat Vladimir Klitschko.
Okay.
All right. What are we doing here?
First of all, I think, isn't Braun Strowman like 500 pounds? Like, I don't think you can make weight.
Well, there's no weight for heavyweight boxing.
I thought there was.
I don't think there's an upper weight.
I think there is. That's why there's a super heavyweight division.
I don't know. Who knows what the guy legitimately... I mean, he's a big guy. He's like, you know, 6'7", 6'8", and probably, you know, 340. But he's not beating Vladimir Klitschko. Now he's a legit boxer, Tyson Fury. Come on.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, notice he didn't. Tyson Fury actually should have gone next level and said that he would beat, you know, one of the other powers in the heavyweight division. Like, he would beat Deontay Wilder. That he'd get laughed at even more.
That would be great. I would love that.
Oh, God. Wrestling. We're going to get to the big fight weekend from UFC side and also what's going on in town with Canelo. But RJ Bell is on the way. We'll find out how he's doing in the super contest. He's in the higher contest, a $5,000 entry, but I know he was above 60% going into last week. At the halfway mark, the leaders of the regular super contest are 31-9. This has been a nutty NFL season. The dogs have been covering at a super high clip. RJ Bell up in five.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.
Third down and 3, 49ers. Kittle going to run the in cut on Baker. Baker stumbled. Kittle made the catch. Kittle in the secondary 10. Runs over a man. Touchdown! San Francisco!
What can you say about George Kittle and his toughness and his mindset? That is unbelievable.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget Las Vegas for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
Tim Ryan, Greg Papa on the call from the Niners Radio Network. Wasn't easy, but the Niners got the job done. Want to find out from RJ Bell where his crew has the Niners now power rated. RJ, how you doing?
Yeah, I mean, this Niners team exceeding expectations big time, obviously, across the season. And I think that's part of the reason people are slow to embrace them. Meaning, if we thought the 49ers were going to be one of the best teams, you look at their numbers, their performance, maybe they're the best team. I'm not sure, but if you consider strength of schedule, you know, New England certainly gets downgraded for that, for a weak schedule, but we didn't. The over-under for San Francisco was 8. That's exactly in the middle. It's a mediocre, you know, average team. And it's just hard to comprehend that a team could be this good when the market thought they were average, and thus the market's slow to adapt and adopt the belief about how good they are. To me, what's different about the 49ers is that the pessimism, the lack of optimism, the 8-8 prediction wasn't about the pedigree of the players. It was more about the recent performance. Everyone could see Jimmy G playing well. Not that it was guaranteed, but they could see the most pedigreed defensive line in history, perhaps, looking playing well. It was just they've never put it together. And in a weird way, I think that's a mistake that people have been this slow, because the pedigree is there. It's not like a Minshew where you're saying, yeah, maybe he's playing okay, but he's a six-round pick or whatever. I think it's a situation where these guys are as talented as any team. I mean, I guess receiver would be an exception, though they've made a trade, you know, obviously. And then I think running back, the backs aren't particularly big names, but Shanahan's able to scheme that running in such a way they're effective. And otherwise, it seems like they got a lot of really good players.
Yeah, I'd be bullish on this team the rest of the way. You mentioned the trade for Emmanuel Sanders, and keep in mind, they're doing all this with the running game, and both of their tackles are out. So once those guys come back, I mean, Staley and McGlinchey come back, you got, I think, one of the best 7-8 coaches in the league, so I'd be fired up. Now, I don't know what that means, though. Do books start adjusting, and then the value on the Niners goes out the window?
Listen, you're never going to have an undefeated team this late that there's any value on.
Right.
The question is, are they pretty much at maybe it could be a smidge, but it's going to be hard to overcome the one. You know, maybe 51% the rest of the year, you know, would be the estimate if you think they're still better than people think. But in general, if all you did was starting in like week 7, and each one of these has a different start point, is play against every undefeated team and play on every winless team, you would do quite well. In fact, I'd probably make a bet in the next 10 years you'd win a little bit of money.
Yeah. No
history
doubt.
Says so, at least.
Yes. All right, what happens to the Patriots this weekend? Can the Ravens give them problems?
Oh, for sure. I mean, one, if you look at Harbaugh off a bye, excellent. Number two, if there's any time to buy is going to motivate a team, it's this week. One, you're playing your nemesis, or at least your nemesis out of division, if you're the Ravens. Number two, you got a second-year quarterback, Lamar Jackson, who, as a runner, means you can do more things with him. Let's say you had a typical quarterback, normal drop-back passer, let's think, Sam Darnold, there you go. And you got the bye week? Yeah, we teach him some stuff, yeah. But how much are you going to do that's really different, that's really innovative? Whereas I would say if someone were willing to give me the typical odds, will Baltimore, let's say, score a touchdown on a trick play? I don't know what the odds of that should be, but if I could get fair odds, like NFL type, across the league odds in any given game, what's the chance of one team having the trick play? I would make a huge bet that Baltimore has a trick play touchdown.
Right.
So if you assume there's a real chance of that, and when I say a huge bet, I mean against the fair odds, not 50-50 necessarily. And if you think there's a chance of that that's significant, now you got to say, okay, if you're spotting the Ravens 7 points or the New England getting spotted 7 points, it's like, you're probably in trouble if you're New England. Now, I know the odds aren't 100%, but I'm saying I do think this is almost a perfect storm of a bye week mattering. And also, though, what we know is that Belichick does very well against inexperienced quarterbacks, first year, second year. What we uncovered at pregame.com, our new researcher McKenzie uncovered this one, 69% against the spread against second-year quarterbacks,
Ooh.
Even better than first year. Now you might say, wait, RJ, that's an aberration, that's goofy. No. What do we know about second-year quarterbacks? They get film on them. So it's kind of a perfect storm of being, yes, still inexperienced, but they're being film on them, and Belichick seems to do best in that spot. Literally, this goes back to his Browns days, covering 70% against second-year quarterbacks. So to me, there's a lot of interesting things going on here. I do have a prop I like if you'd like to hear about it.
Do it. Fire.
All right. I love this one. Over passing yards, Lamar Jackson. We're guessing it's in the 205 range. I like it all the way up to 219.
Mm.
The price isn't out yet. Here's why. What does Belichick do? How does he stop the other team, Steve?
You tell me.
Well, he tends to try to take away their strength.
Right.
Make them play left-handed is the phrase that, Patriots use. Well, Lamar Jackson, more than any quarterback in the NFL, at this time, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, is relying on the run. And I know those games he doesn't run as much, but net-net, the most reliant quarterback on the run. That's what he feels the most comfortable with, obviously. So what's Belichick going to do? He's going to stop the run. Doesn't matter what it takes. He's not going to let you do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're one-on-one out there, it strikes me that there's going to be a few completions. I like the fact that we're using Belichick's approach combined with the most, one-dimensional, well, not one-dimensional, I wouldn't say, but the most relying on the run of any quarterback, that makes it a perfect storm again. A lot of perfect storms here of, wow, we can use the way Belichick approaches these games against the market by liking Lamar Jackson over throwing yards.
RJ Bell is with us at RJ in Vegas, straight out of Vegas, 5 days a week on Fox Sports Radio National. We talked last week about the books and the numbers on Green Bay, and a lot of them didn't make sense. All right, it's 3.5 this time in L.A. at the Chargers. I want to know what you think of the number, and do you agree with this, that I wouldn't make Green Bay, give them a 3 for a home game, but I would penalize the Chargers in the spot and give Green Bay a little extra credit. I think there's going to be like 50, 60, 70% Green Bay fans at that stadium.
I've heard people say they're thinking there's going to be 85% Green Bay fans.
Oh, God.
I mean, but here's the thing. What percentage is the crowd in a home field advantage? So obviously the crowd's one of it,
right.
One element. Number two is going to be you're not on the road, so you don't have to travel, which is an advantage. Number three is going to be you're familiar with the turf, the sight lines, the wind, all the different things. So even if you count the crowd as half, which I think is too much, the most you're going to be able to do is take away that half. But
okay.
But if it is, but here's the thing. If it is, that'd be if it was a neutral crowd. If there is that Green Bay crowd screaming, then maybe it does swing a whole 3 points, right? Meaning a half a point that you've taken away the Chargers' home, or 1.5 you've taken away their home crowd, 1.5 the Green Bay benefits from it. So I would agree with this. This is probably the smallest home field advantage of any matchup this year in the NFL. The combination of the Chargers with Green Bay traveling so well. You could say Pittsburgh was analogous, but the Chargers weren't yet in the pits of likely not making the playoffs, and thus the crowd, whatever crowd enthusiasm there was in that Pittsburgh game, maybe they're less enthusiastic, the Chargers fan themselves, because, hey, this team's really not going anywhere.
What do we do with the Browns the rest of the way? Is this a ridiculous number on the road, in the elevation? They're laying as much as 4.5. Now, on Denver's side, you would assume it's a downgrade to Brandon Allen from Joe Flacco. What do we do with this game?
So we got four Allens now in the quarterback in the NFL. And what's interesting is the quarterback for Carolina, an Allen, had the smallest hands of any quarterback in the NFL. So he was 9 3/8 inches, his hands. And he had to, 10 is what the NFL likes. Anything below 10, they start to get skeptical. Now, Allen has done better the last game or two, but he had like 6 fumbles in 4 games.
Right.
So it was happening, right? Well, this Allen, literally his hands are 8 7/8 inches.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So to me, and this is amazing, is that the turnover battle winner is more predictive of who wins the game than who's leading at halftime. So imagine you were asleep for 2 days. You woke up, you missed some games. And your girlfriend comes and says, hey, I want to make some bets with you on the games that's passed. I'll let you pick. If you somehow could be told who was leading at halftime or who won the turnover battle, wouldn't you ask for the halftime score?
Of course.
Actually, the turnover battle is more predictive.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So when you got a guy that's going to fumble, again, maybe he won't. But to me, that's a big advantage for Cleveland. It's a 3-point downgrade, and Flacco's not all that great. And then, to me, here's the thing. What's the biggest problem with road favorites? It's road favorites who are not motivated. Because why? Because they are so clearly better than this team. If you're favored on the road, you're clearly... When is there an example when a road favorite isn't really potentially complacent, potentially looking past? Is a bye. Because if you took the week off, you're going to be focused for that game. And you know, it's an amazing number, road favorites off a bye. Amazing. So to me, Cleveland, though not off a bye, is a perfect example of a road favorite that's in a must-win spot, pretty much. And because of that, at 3 especially, I know it's gone, I loved the Browns. Now I like them.
Last one. We got about a minute. What's your strongest lean like for your Super Contest Gold entry?
Well, see, I won't give you – I'm going to give you one that's not for that just because the line in that one stinks. But I – meaning I like the Dolphins a good bit.
Really?
And the line's only 3, and it's moving towards if it's not 3.5 now. So Dolphins plus 3.5, I love. And here's why, quickly, is early on, I think there was motivational issues for Miami. And I also think in the middle of the year, Rosen turned out to be horrible. I know you could say last year was horrible. I wasn't sure yet. He's horrible. So now the last couple of games have been the first time the team hasn't been unmotivated, and Fitzpatrick's been the quarterback, not Rosen. And in those games, the best stats ever for a 17-point dog against the Bills. There's 40 different teams in that sample, so that's a real thing. And then they should have, or they almost beat Pittsburgh. They were up 14-0. So this team's covering in the current state because of that. And let's be candid. The Jets, this might be, are they going to keep their job? I was on New York radio today with Michael Kay, and he was saying if the Jets lose this game, they might fire him right there.
Oh.
I mean, think about it. You lose the winless. So to me, that's negative pressure on the Jets. I like Miami plus 3.5 a ton.
On that show, do you ever challenge that guy, Don LaGreca? He yells a lot. It's kind of scary.
So you're aware of this, huh?
Oh, yeah. He's a freaking lunatic. He was I think we played audio, I don't know, like 4 months ago. I thought he was going to fight, I don't know, he's got some other guy, Rothenberg, on the show. I thought they were going to square off. Like, calm down.
So you're not aware of this. I've been, like, dogging him, acting like I forget his name.
No.
I actually don't know his name. But yeah. I'll say, Dinky or, you know, Rothenberg. I'm acting like I don't know his name. He gets so mad. And I say Mr. K to Michael K. Oh, it's hilarious.
Look at you. Twisted, you know.
Started off with Steve Cofield, so yeah. I mean, you knew that I was good. Because I'll be candid with you, you got a great ear for guests. I mean, you really do. And thus, here we are.
There we are. All right, RJ, have a winning weekend. We'll talk to you.
Thank you,
RJ Bell at RJ in Vegas on Twitter, pregame.com, and 5 days a week on Straight Out of Vegas. We'll get back to the NFL. We did not hit on the Raiders, so Miles Simmons, Adam's buddy at the paper, will join us in about 30 minutes, and an award-winning Big Five is on the way.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.